right now, as we do each and every week, we're going to go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number one, Pat, PGA Tour getting tougher on slow play. The tour's pace of play policy, which began in 2003, incorporated a $20,000 fine for the 10th time during the season that a player was put on the clock. And a new policy change, the tour is now going after repeat offenders even more. Anyone put on the clock 10 times for a $20,000 fine will also face double that amount, $40,000, the following year if he gets put on the clock 10 times that season. Then they'll double that amount the following year after that. In the third year, if a player is put on the clock 10 times, he'll be fined $80,000. Pat, your thoughts?
I mean, you know, the tour always has these statements like, we are going to battle slow play, and here's how we're going to do it, blah, blah, blah. That's fine, Russ, you know, finding guys. But here's what I think will really work is actually docking them strokes, which is what I think they're supposed to do. Because here's why. That money does not really mean that much. I know it sounds like a lot in these economic times, and it is, but with these guys making multiple millions of dollars, even the guy 125 on the money list making a lot of money, a $40,000 fine or whatever is really not going to impact them. Now, do they want to pay it? No. But the bottom line with it is it's really not going to impact their slow play. The embarrassment factor of an official coming out onto the course and saying, I am docking you two strokes at this point, and plus what that does to your mental makeup for the rest of the round, would do much more, in my opinion, than just finding them after the fact or after the season or whenever they're going to do it. I think you need to almost embarrass these guys while they're in play, while they're playing, to have any kind of impact. Because the one thing guys don't want to do is be embarrassed, I don't think, at their place of work. They don't want to have an official come out and say, I'm docking you two strokes or whatever the penalty is going to be for slow play. So I think that's really going to be the chief motivator for this, not finding them after the fact.
I agree with you. And I also think that if they really want to get tough on slow play, decrease the number of transgressions before you actually fine a guy 10 times in a season. That's ridiculous. I would venture that there's only been maybe a player or two over the last 4 or 5 years that's been put on the clock 10 times in one season. Why don't you make it 3 or 4 times? After the third time he's put on the clock in one season, you dock him 10 grand or something. And then the fourth time, okay, you dock him another 10 grand, something like that. Topic number two, also PGA Tour news. PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finchem said on Wednesday in Atlanta from the Tour Championship, it is unlikely that golf will make it through the end of the year next year without losing corporate sponsors and possibly some tournaments. Finchem said the marketing budgets remain small even as the economy is showing signs of recovery. The Tour has about a dozen sponsors that have contracts through the end of 2010. Negotiations still ongoing for other sponsors. Finchem said it's possible we could lose a couple of events. It's probable that we're going to lose some sponsors. The two are different things, really. It's more likely that we'll lose more sponsorships than events. They've already lost a couple of events. We know that the Buick Open in Michigan's gone. We also know the Buick Invitational is gone, although that event might, the sponsor Buick is gone, but the event at Torrey Pines might remain. Pat, your thoughts?
Well, you know, if you listen to the show, Russ, I constantly rail that the golf season is way, way too long. I mean, going into this fall series after today is absolutely ridiculous. I'm all for the President's Cup in a couple weeks, and that should be it. I mean, you know, once football starts, I just think it's very tough for any other sport, let alone something like golf, which is now out of its season, quote unquote, to be able to compete with football. So having the fall series, I think it's just a waste of time, and, you know, it's a money grab for a lot of these guys, which is fine if they actually have people willing to sponsor and show up. I guess there's an economic rationale for it to happen. But nonetheless, I'm always for shrinking the golf schedule in some manner, especially when you're playing tournaments against majors or you're playing tournaments just before majors or just after majors. You know my spiel, let the majors stand on their own and be special events and don't have events too close to them or especially going concurrently against them. So I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. We need to shrink some of the tour events to make – those other events more special.
Yeah, and I am in agreement with you, Pat. This has been an ongoing theme for our show, probably for the 5 years we've been doing it, that there need, you know, 47 events on the PGA Tour this year. That's too many. What's the magic number? Not sure. Maybe 40, maybe 38, but certainly 47 events is too many. Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you, Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic. It's our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number three, LPGA, also losing some of its events. It's lost one of its most marquee events. Anheuser-Busch announced on Monday that it is not renewing its sponsorship of the popular Michelob Ultra Open at Kings Mill after 7 years. The LPGA has lost seven tournaments since 2007, and the bleeding continues. LPGA had 34 events in 2007. This year it had 27, but it lost three of those mid-season. So really, the real number this year was 24. It lost longtime sponsor Corning after 31 years and several others. Currently for 2010, 17 events signed on for the LPGA Tour. Pat, your thoughts?
Oh my God, 17 events. This really needs to almost be blown up, Russ. Again, whoever takes over as the full-time commissioner, I think the number one priority is to figure out the schedule, figure out, you know, and to do that, you've got to woo sponsors. You've got to get people on board with a plan first. You've got to say, here's when our season is going to be. We're not going to have like one tournament in the U.S. and then go a month and a half before we come back to the U.S. You're not going to, you shouldn't be doing that kind of crazy stuff, even though the tour is currently being taken over by a lot of Asian players and folks that maybe aren't familiar with the LPGA Tour. I mean, we haven't had an American win an LPGA event, Russ, since May. I mean, that's unbelievable. So you've got to figure out, what is this tour? Is it going to be a world tour? Is that where the money is? Is that where the exposure is going to be? Or can it be an American Central Tour again? And if it can't, then that's what all this stuff needs to be figured out. And they almost need to take a year off. They can play the U.S. Women's Open and, you know, some of those other events that have a huge history with them. But the rest of this stuff, they need to take a comprehensive look, Russ, at what they want to be and how they want to do it and how they think they can compete against the PGA Tour, baseball, the senior tour when, you know, they're going against their 50 majors and that type of stuff. So it's almost like it calls for a time to say, how many tournaments can we run? How can we run them effectively? How can we have them in a logical, sequential order to give us the most bang for our buck and to give some of the exposure to the Michelle Wees, the Paula Kramers, and you know, the younger players that should be competing and coming to the fore as this goes forward.
Yeah, 34 events 2 years ago in 2007, certainly too many. This year, effectively about 24, probably the right number. Next year, 17. That's not enough. So
right.
So the magic number for the LPGA Tour, probably in the low 20s. But roughly, hey, we said 17 for the 2010 season signed on as of right now. Roughly half of those are outside the contiguous 48 states, as you mentioned. Couple in Hawaii, couple in Mexico, a few of them in Asia. I don't think that's good for the health of the LPGA Tour moving forward, because I think the grassroots of their fans are here in the U.S. primarily, even though there are a lot of the players that are international. And they do need to woo some international sponsors. I agree with that. But, you know, there's a fine line between wooing international sponsors and becoming a primarily international tour. Topic number four, Pat, talking Twitter. Tour pros passing along equipment secrets while social networking. We've got a number of examples. Paul Casey last week tweeted about his new Nike driver, which is yet unseen. He posted a twit pic, a photograph of the club, shortly after putting it in play in Fort Worth as he was testing it out at the Nike R&D facility. He wrote, VR driver with a compression channel. It creates a large sweet spot. Those were his 140 characters on Twitter, along with the twit pic. Davis Love III sharing information on his Scotty Cameron putter by Titleist. He said that the Titleist staff discovered his putter was 1.5 degrees too upright, and they fixed the problem. Also, Ping reps revealed that they were on their way to Mark Calcavecchia's Palm Beach Gardens house to pick up five staff bags worth of old clubs. Pat, your thought on today's PGA Tour players being more accessible than Arnie and Jack were 30 and 40 years ago?
Well, they are more accessible, Russ, but I, you know, those things are just ads. They're being paid by, you know, their companies. I don't even think they're tweeting that stuff. I think the companies are doing it, just put it on their accounts or whatever you do. You know, when the internet first came out, it was great in a way because it was so raw and new, and there wasn't a lot of, you know, what I call like noise with it. It was basic, just, you know, people trying to pass information along to each other, and there, without the, you know, encumbrances of advertising and pop-ups and all these other things. And I think that's what's happening with Twitter now. When it first came out, it was like just a pure, like, here are my thoughts on things. A lot of times it was controversial stuff. And now what you're getting into is almost
promotional.
Promotional.
Exactly.
And it's, yeah, will it ruin it? Maybe not, but it'll definitely lessen the amount of people like who would normally listen to or receive a Paul Casey Twitter or tweet. You know, now they're going to be like, well, I don't know if he's really tweeting about something or if it's just you know, Nike or whoever forcing him to do something.
I kind of like it. I'm all about more information, and I'm a golf junkie, so I eat this stuff up. And I follow all of these players, by the way, on Twitter, along with Stuart Sink, who tweeted about all the – Stuart Sink tweeted about all his specific specs of his 14 clubs. He talked about the STD loft and length on his irons, 2 through putting, pitching wedge, 4 degrees upright, his driver, a 9.5-degree actual loft, and he talked about the shaft and all the specs for that as well. So he was getting uber technical, but I will tell you this. Not so sure that all these players are just letting the equipment companies open their Twitter accounts and post tweets. Christina Kim tweeted about her new Callaway FT9 driver, and she said it doesn't suit her. The last good driver they made me was the FT3 5 years ago.
Good. Well, that's a legitimate. So that I like that. That's real. That's not, you know, this is the best thing I've ever, you know, who knows if that's true or not.
So follow Paul Casey and Davis Love III and Stuart Sink and Christina Kim on Twitter today. Get all their equipment updates. That is another award-winning edition of the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa.